From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Another beautiful week here in Wyoming. Hope you all are doing well. Here in Cheyenne, winter is fully underway. We finally got a little bit of snow, which is lovely. Last week, you probably might have noticed that I did not actually drop a podcast. I had one, and I ended up not dropping it, mainly because last week, some of you probably realized, was a pretty rough week in Wyoming. A lot of very, very tragic things happened, from the shooting up in the northern part of the state to a horrific accident in the southwest corner of the state. We've just had an inordinate amount of tragedy, and it didn't feel right. You know, I love doing this podcast. I love talking about politics, but when you're confronted with things like that, it makes you realize how insignificant in so many ways the machinations of politics really are, and it didn't feel appropriate. So I'm going to talk about some things that I wanted to talk about last week, this week, and go over mainly what we've missed from last week, which is shockingly as slow as things move in the legislature, deliberately so. That's a good thing, folks, not a bad thing. We want things to not rush through. A lot of stuff is still out there and still percolating. But today, I really want to dive into, first off, a growing problem in the Wyoming House of Representatives, which is the increasing breakdown of the decorum that's happening on that floor this year. Last year, I think I've mentioned this, and I wrote about it when I was writing for Wyofile. There was a lot of ugliness in the Senate, but it wasn't necessarily a decorum issue. What we're seeing on the House side this year is definitely a decorum issue. So if you've been paying attention to the legislative process, you may have noticed this. There's been a really significant spike in what's called points of order being called on the House floor by members. I watch it, you know, quite often, and it's been occurring multiple times throughout the week. And here's the issue around it. So point of order is an objection that you can make. But not all of the point of orders that are being made have a real basis in parliamentary procedure, which is what a point of order is. It's simply a tool that you use to point out some infraction against a parliamentary procedure. The ones that we're seeing right now seem more like something that's, you know, they're being used more like a weapon or a tool to just completely disrupt the person speaking, stop them, to delay the debate. And it really tends to create chaos on the floor. Folks have really got some itchy fingers in that chamber, and they want to get up to that mic and say, point of order, when in fact there is really no parliamentary point to be made. They just most likely don't like what they're hearing. And honestly, I'm going to give you two examples coming from the exact same person. And they're just both examples of she did not like what was being said or did not like the person speaking for a number of reasons, and I'll get into that. And this is really coming, I mean, the Freedom Caucus is in charge, right? They have the majority, so they are in charge in that chamber. And, you know, usually the speaker is in the chair. And while most of these times he rules against the point of order, basically tells them you've made your point, that's enough, he has not specifically said, you know, he's not specifically overruled the point, which is what he should be doing. He should be saying, you're overruled. You're incorrect. Please sit down. But he hasn't. So a vast majority of these points are coming from Freedom Caucus members. All right. So let me just break this down for you first before we get to the clips and you can kind of hear what's going on. I want to give a shout out to Gail Simons from Civics 307. She put up a really good post last week that kind of just went into the actual rules themselves so y'all can understand what we're talking about. This comes from Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedures. That's the guide that state legislatures, including Wyoming, use. A point of order is a formal objection raised when a member believes that the rules or procedures of the legislative body are being violated. So valid reasons for calling a point of order include, and I'm going to go through a number of them. Number one, a violation of parliamentary procedure or rule. Number two, a breach of order or decorum in the chamber. Number three, a violation of the rules of debate. I'll give you an example. You only get once after they're done with the first and second reading, our first reading, which is committee of the whole, on the second and third reading, you only get two times to speak. So if someone went to the mic for a third time, there'd be a point of order that they cannot speak anymore. Those times for speaking can be limited to 2 minutes, depending on whether they're doing that. So if someone went over that time, it would be a point of order and they would be asked to stop. So that would be, you know, sort of rules of debate. So number three, a violation of rules of debate. Number four, a deviation from the germane topic of the discussion. So, and we've had a few of the points of order have actually been that, and they've been appropriately called correctly, that you are not on the amendment, you're talking about the bill, or you're talking about something else. And those are perfectly fine. I mean, they happen all the time. Number five, procedural errors in the conduct of business. I don't know that I have a great example of that one, but we'll move on. And then number six, improper or undiplomatic matters being considered. Most of these, I think, are pretty obvious violations. Number five, maybe not so much. Breach of order, I think, like calling any kind of point of order, you want to reference exactly what the violation is or what the breach of order is. But I think the last one, number six, is probably the least clear just in terms of what in the world is an undiplomatic matter. A lot of these points of order, I think, are somehow according, or maybe in the minds of these Freedom Caucus folks, somehow part of this, but they really aren't. I think some examples of a number six, an improper or undiplomatic matter being considered, would potentially be like a personal attack, right? So that's just not allowed on the floor. And I think some of these points of order that I think are being used inappropriately, I think the person doing it might think that they're being personally attacked when they're not. And the two examples I'll give you, in one, maybe you could think it was an example, and the second one, it was just clearly not. And she was simply upset about the person speaking and wanted to stop the person speaking. Either way, you know, they're inappropriate. Obviously, personal attacks are not allowed on the floor. Comments that attack the character or the motivations of any of the members is not allowed. And we have seen some of that. There's definitely been, I think because tensions are high, I think these folks are very diametrically opposed to some of the policies that are on the floor. There has been this desire to either impugn the person personally or impugn the motives of why they're doing what they're doing. And it just isn't allowed. I mean, when I served, no one would have been allowed to do that. I mean, any time that, even if there was even a whiff of that, you would have been gaveled down. So, and of course, any kind of use of offensive language at the mic, and we have had a little of that, nothing too salacious, folks. I'm not going to say what the word was, but we have had a little of that, but it wasn't anything, you know, terribly egregious. But appropriately, they should have a point of order because obviously this is for the public. People are watching, children are watching. It's just completely inappropriate. You don't need to use offensive language. So, I think we've got a lot of stuff that I think is, you know, happening, a lot of reasons it's happening. But I have to be honest with you, it seems to be getting worse. Like, people are beginning to become entrenched in this idea that they can get away with it and do it rather than being, I don't know, you know, called in for some legislative procedural violation. So, and that's what concerns me, is that it just continues to happen and there doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, behind the scenes chastisement going on, and that should be happening. That should be happening, and so because the leadership should do that, right? Your members should not fall into bad habits of just using point of order every time they're upset. That's not. I mean, even if you watch the British Parliament, which I love the procedure by which they debate, it's a lot more raucous than American chambers, which are much more rules oriented. And obviously, in the British sense, you know, you can lob kind of not insults like a bar insult, but you can definitely be much more raucous and loud. And that's not how we do it in America. But if you watch it, if you watch what you're seeing on the floor, it feels a little bit more like that, where people are just ganging up on one mic and saying point of order and stopping and trying to stop others from talking. And again, that's not appropriate. And the Freedom Caucus leadership should be doing more about this, in my estimation, because it just doesn't seem to be happening because the points of order continue. So if you watch and listen, I'm going to give you a couple of examples, just two. And then you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I really think both of these are thinly veiled attempts to silence people rather than engaging in substantive debate, waiting her turn, going to the mic and then debating the points and rebuking the points. She did points of order, which is essentially to just shut the person down, stop their train of thought, stop what they're saying. And, you know, this is just wrong. I mean, it's wrong. Obviously, it's wrong for a reason. And it just, you know, like I said, it needs to stop happening. Now, I've seen, you know, I'm trying to look at it from both sides. And I've seen it from both sides, right? Because we've seen points of order on both sides on that floor from folks who are in the Freedom Caucus and for all the rest of them who are not in the Freedom Caucus. But generally, there's really an air of defiance in the Freedom Caucus members who are doing it. And I think in some ways it's probably because they're in the majority. So they probably feel no threat of being chastised or no threat of being overruled and saying, no, don't do that. And certainly my experience has been that it hasn't happened. So they are debating really hot topics, right? These are emotional issues. Everybody in that chamber is hypercharged and they want to win. Like all these people that get elected are generally pretty, you know, high charged people. And so decorum really matters for that reason as well. Lots of competitive people there that want to win. And when you don't do that, things can go very badly wrong and it can get worse. My husband laughingly has been saying that, you know, he's certain that one of these days he's going to watch it and it's going to be like, you know, some Taiwanese parliamentary chamber where they're flipping chairs at each other. And now, I say that as a joke. That should never happen. And I hope that never happens. We don't ever want to see that. But it has gotten to the point where I feel like there should be some kind of intervention. So let me give you an example. So the person I'm talking about, the two examples are going to come from Representative Rachel Rodriguez Williams. She is the head of the Freedom Caucus. And she's done it more times than that. But I'm going to give you two examples of her making points of order that I think have absolutely nothing to do with, you know, her point. I mean, she wasn't really even making a point. She was just trying to stop the person from speaking. She was unhappy with what they were saying. So I'm going to give you the first point, then I'll come back and talk about it, then I'll give you the second point. So hold for the first audio.
Appreciate the consideration. Yes, all these bills are very important, but I can tell you as a representative of my district that property taxes are the number one issue. And so I will represent my district and oppose the amendment.
This Senate File 69 is a big bill. It's a big deal. And it will take hours of work. So I just think this proposal gives our leadership of this chamber the opportunity to serve its members. Because I tell you, if that Senate file goes up in front of some folks' bills, they're not going to be happy. And it's unnecessary because we're going to hear it first thing tomorrow.
Point of order.
So your point, Representative, excuse me, Representative, your point?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'm not quite sure what to make of the good representative here from the Windy Cities direct look at me when he said that, as if my opposition to the motion going to have some sort of point of order.
Representative.
Repercussions.
Representative. With all due respect, he was speaking to the reason why we would want to lay it back. I will allow that latitude to do that.
So obviously there was no reason to call a point of order there. She was upset or seemed to be upset because the speaker who was Representative Steve Harshman, was turning in the podium and looking in her direction as he was talking about this motion to take a Senate file off of committee in the whole and continue to work House bills. This was the last day to work House bills. So the argument was that why are we doing a Senate file? Because you're going to kill a whole bunch of House bills just so we can talk about this bill that we can talk about literally tomorrow. But I think what upset her was that he referenced that some of the members, including I think some of her own members in the Freedom Caucus, would be upset about that. And perhaps she considered that a personal threat. This is audio. I can tell you if you watch the video as well, he certainly didn't have any menacing behavior. He wasn't looking scary or upset or, you know, angry at her or anything like that. You can tell from the audio, obviously from the voice, that he wasn't, but just to say that he was not, I think that's important as well, because he wasn't. So this is one example. Let me go to the next example. So hold for that.
Representative Brown, first time, sir.
Shocking again, Mr. Speaker. Guess I'm going to be, you know, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate the amendment to have this discussion yet again. There's been a big portion of me that is really battled with this idea of backfill. I don't want to leave my county not being able to pay for firefighters, cops, EMS services.
What's your point, Representative Williams?
Mr. Speaker, thank you. My hope is that the body doesn't get into the habit when we come to the mic and we address you as a speaker, that we don't add some sort of comment before we address you, just as the previous speaker just did. When we come to the mic, the first thing we do is we're supposed to say, Mr. Speaker, and then speak onto the topic, whether it's an amendment or a bill, not say things like, it's shocking, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I got shocked.
Oh, you literally got shocked.
Ladies and gentlemen, representatives, focus all of your attention towards the speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Brown, please proceed.
Good grief. Mr. Speaker.
So not a great exchange. As you can tell from the end, the speaker who got interrupted, which is Representative Landon Brown from here in Cheyenne, he was frustrated. He was obviously very frustrated. That point of order had no basis in actual merit. There was nothing that he did wrong. There is no actual rule. It's a common courtesy once you have asked. The asking of having time at the mic is what is required. And then once it's granted by the chair or the Speaker of the House, whoever's in the chair, you can go on and say whatever you want to say. It's courtesy to say, thank you, Mr. Speaker, or I appreciate that, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Speaker, let me explain to you something or other. But you don't necessarily have to. So her little sort of etiquette diatribe doesn't have any real basis in merit. She just was angry. And to give you some context, there was actually a Cowboy State Daily article that came out earlier that day, very critical, with Landon Brown in it, with Representative Brown in it, very critical of something that had happened earlier in the day when a member of the Freedom Caucus wasn't on the floor to explain a bill. And so some of the co-sponsors had to get up and talk about it, and they couldn't. They didn't know anything about the bill. They couldn't explain it. They were completely befuddled. And Landon, Representative Brown, got up and just kind of chastised all the members and said that, I think he voiced frustration that a lot of people are feeling because they're seeing on this floor that so many of these members of the Freedom Caucus are simply not prepared and do not know. They are really there to just be a vote for the Freedom Caucus so they can hold a majority, but they're not necessarily active, thinking, debating members of the body, which is really important to the whole process. Like, everybody needs to get up and talk and speak. And of course, it's super important to the constituents who voted, who they represent, and the voters who voted for them, who they're supposed to be representing if they're not doing it. And I think that article made her angry because she seemed to take her wrath out on him, and he was the subject matter of the article. And so getting up and doing that, it's so unbecoming. It's so profoundly unbecoming. It is so inappropriate to the body and just wrong, right? immature. I mean, I could go on. I have a lot of words I could use. And she's the head. I have no idea why they allowed her to be the head of their caucus. She does not have the leadership skills to do it. That is so apparent. You can see it on the floor in her behavior. She does seem to be someone who I think might be a little bit vindictive, and she goes after people who don't, I think, kowtow. So it's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. So decorum, I think, is going to continue to be an issue because we're just not seeing these folks, you know, figuring it out, taking the time to figure it out. The Freedom Caucus doesn't seem to be doing what they should do. You know, you'll grow when you have good leadership. You'll grow into bad habits when you have bad leadership. And these points of order are not good. And it's becoming obvious that these members are growing into bad habits, which is going to make the legislative body harder to function in a healthy way. So that it just things like that never happened when I served. And for years, you know, it never happened. I can't imagine it happening. I want to tell you that. I just cannot. Watching it, when I watch it, I just cringe. Having served in that chamber for 6 years, I cannot imagine behaving in that manner and doing that and getting away with it consistently. Like you would have been, most likely, I would have been dragged into the speaker's office and given a talking to, a severe talking to. And I had a talking to one time. I'm not going to reveal my infraction here on this podcast because it was nothing like what we're seeing now. But I did get a talking to once, and I was in the wrong, and I deserved the talking to. And I learned. I went home a little bruised that night, and I felt bad for myself for a day, and then realized that I deserved it. And it made me better to realize, but that's not happening. these folks are just getting up to the mic and talking about whatever they want to. Even when they get off topic or they go too far, things can get ugly, right? People can get angry, which is why having decorum is so important, and which is why these points of order shouldn't be abused, because they create dysfunction. And also, I think the one point I want to make clear, they erode trust. They erode trust in the system. I mean, both for the public who watches this, who's thinking, my goodness, these people look like a bunch of clowns, but it also erodes trust amongst the members in the body themselves, that sense of collegiality, that you're all there together. And, you know, it's such an honor to be elected. And when you walk into that chamber that other people don't get to sit on and you do this work, there has to be a sense of collegiality. There has to be a sense of trust. When you add so much strife and so much politics onto that floor, the trust is being eroded. And ultimately, all of these things, this taking up of time, the dysfunction, it's wasting taxpayer dollars. All of these points of order are eating up time every time it happens. And it is the Freedom Caucus who is allowing this to happen. Since they've come into power, and even though they promised, you know, constitutional governance, we're seeing a lot of political theater that shouldn't happen. The Mason's Manual, the way in which the decorum on the floor should happen, is part of that constitutional order. And I think they need to start figuring that out and start getting a lot more, harsh on their own members. I think they've been basking in the glory of having the votes and winning all the time on the floor, that they've forgotten something really important, which is that they still need to invest in making their own caucus majority better. I mean, they have to make them better. And I know that they have all these, you know, outside DC consultants who they talk to every day, who are doing all their PR and who are pumping out all these things. Those people don't care about the decorum. Those people care about winning. They care about raising money for their own cause and keeping this National Freedom Caucus firmly ensconced in Wyoming. But they go away after everybody goes home and everybody goes back to their homes in Wyoming. Those DC people are still in DC and they don't care. But we have to live with this here in Wyoming. And I'm not necessarily saying this as some kind of hit on Representative Chip Nyman, who's the Speaker of the House. He's very new to that chamber as well. He hasn't served that long. He was never even a chairman before he became Speaker of House. He was a majority floor leader for 2 years. And now he's the head. He's the Speaker of the House. And for all intents and purposes, kind of a quasi-leader of the Freedom Caucus, although Rachel Rodriguez-Williams is truly the supposed chairman. Of their cause. So, you know, that leadership problem really means that leaders on the floor are kind of weak, and that's not good. It's not good overall for the process. It's not good for a functioning fair body. And that's what the people of Wyoming expect, and that's what they deserve to have. They deserve to have a House of Representatives that works. So what I would say is that the speaker needs to step up and enforce the rules. If he doesn't understand them, he needs to get more guidance. And he can certainly get more guidance. There's all kinds of ways to help him. But I think he does. I mean, he has actually been a fairly good speaker. He understands the process. He's done it very well. And he comes across most times very fair, which is exactly what he should. But he needs to get a better handle on this. Whatever it is, shut it down. Don't say that, you know, don't say, you know, on to the next speaker or thank you. Say I'm ruling you down. I'm ruling you down. Your point of order is incorrect. Now sit down. That's what needs to happen. And then in private, you know, tell them to knock it off. No more. Because when voters understand how these representatives are behaving, I hope they hold them accountable. I think it's important to hold it accountable. So, yeah. All right. The next thing I want to talk about is Senate File 69. This was something happening last week, this property tax relief bill. We've seen, obviously, if you're on social media across the state, you've probably been seeing some of the county commissioners, mayors, police chiefs, firefighters stepping forward and voicing real concern. I've talked about this in the past and sort of what has happened. So that bill went through a huge amount of theater between last week and this week. Last week, they had prolonged debate on a Thursday, made a bunch of changes, I think some fairly good changes. They put on an amendment that was not from a Freedom Caucus member, which shows you that there was perhaps some dissension in the ranks of the Freedom Caucus, because let me just say that everything that's been happening on that floor on the House is very scripted, and generally there's no surprise. The Freedom Caucus is winning every single time. Their members are voting in lockstep. As a matter of fact, the article that I referenced that Landon Brown was involved in that obviously made Rachel Rodriguez-Williams so angry, talked about sort of this in lockstep voting that's going on, and the fact that these members don't seem to understand the things that they're talking about. They just seem to be told how to vote and they go vote, and that's all there is to it. And I think that's, you know, we're seeing that very clearly. But on Thursday, last Thursday, we saw that these folks didn't have some kind of consensus, because an amendment brought by Representative Ken Clouston from Campbell County was really trying to narrow in on the problem, which is this straight across the board 50% cut is an arbitrary number to begin with. I mean, the question that everyone keeps asking that I think is probably one of the most important questions is, where did this number come from? It is not based in any kind of fact. It's not based in any kind of number or any kind of, you know, crunching numbers and finding it. There's nothing, there's no data point that you can tie it to that would make sense, that you could go and say to the voters, hey, we think this is the right number. Literally, there's nothing. One member got up on Monday and said something along the lines of, well, the people who created the People's Initiative, this ballot initiative that we're all going to have to vote on in 2026, they chose 50%. But even those people don't know. I mean, some folks have asked them on social media. A friend of mine asked one of the bringers of that People's Initiative that collected all those signatures. And she just said, because we couldn't do 100%, she wanted to just eliminate property taxes altogether. Not really a good answer for why, because the whole point of this was supposed to provide some people some relief from these huge property tax increases we saw through the COVID years. So that's what the Thursday amendment actually did, was it kind of focused in and narrowed in on the idea that we were just going to give back the increase, which I think is actually really smart. I mean, it's not a tax cut, so let's not call it a tax cut, because that's not what that would be doing. It would just be solving the problem that have led most people to say they want some kind of tax cut. I'm not completely convinced that people generally want like a complete cut forever and ever. I think what they want is relief from that COVID increase. And that's what the amendment did, was looking at 2019 to 2024 and taking that increase and then basing it on the increase county by county. Because the problem with the 50% cut is that people who didn't see huge increases are going to get, you know, big refunds back. I mean, double homeowners in Teton County that have, you know, million-dollar homes or hundreds of millions of dollar homes and clearly do not need any kind of tax cut are going to get it. And that's there's a sense of unfairness to this kind of across the board thing. If your goal, again, if your goal is to help people weather what was these terrible COVID increases because we had cash buyers coming into the state and paying over market value for all kinds of stuff, and it drove everybody's evaluations up. Now, those valuations are coming down, which is another part of the problem that I think the Freedom Caucus is going to face, is that those valuations are coming down and people just aren't feeling the crunch like they were before. They're seeing their taxes go down. There is a small, as I will say endlessly about the Freedom Caucus, there is a small and radical, group of followers that, you know, either don't believe in any taxes whatsoever. They're so libertarian or anarchist. They don't believe in that. Or there's the folks that I think want some kind of tax relief, but don't know exactly what they can get. So they're, you know, just trying to figure out what can I or what can't I get. And so I think that's where we're at. We'll see. The amendment went on Thursday. It came off on Monday. And what was clearly just a very orchestrated sort of, the Freedom Caucus had gathered their steam, I think, over the weekend, sat people down, gave them a lecture too, because they're also beholden to other outside national groups, Young Americans for Liberty, who spent all this money in our last election. I don't think they wanted something that small. I think they want a big old 50%, because I think their goal is ultimately to get rid of property tax altogether. And so they came back on Monday, and people who voted for the Ken Clouster Amendment didn't really have much to say about why they were changing their votes. And I think that's obviously a problem. So Senate File 69 has passed both chambers, a conference committee. The Senate did not concur with the changes in the House, so a conference committee is going to have to be appointed. I think there's going to be a lot of deliberations. I don't know if Senate File 69 survives or not, because there's such a wide gap. The House or the Senate has taken the position of absolutely no backfill. For reasons that I can completely understand. Like I understand the argument for backfill and I agree with it. If you look at this as not a tax cut bill, that this is just a weather people through this big COVID era increase, then backfill makes perfect sense for the short amount of time that this happens, that's to help these counties. Now, if you're like the Freedom Caucus, or if you're like the Freedom Caucus's people, they're national people who are pumping money into Wyoming to win elections, and you consider this a tax bill, and myself as someone who's fiscally conservative, I would say that doing backfill like the Freedom Caucus is doing is not good tax policy, not good tax cutting policy, right? Like that doesn't work. You can't be a fiscal conservative when you're spending taxpayer money in perpetuity to prop up a local government and call that cutting taxes. It ain't a tax cut if you don't reduce government. Milton Friedman understood this. Tax cuts should include reduced government. That's the whole point. That is what fiscal conservatives like myself believe. So if you are taking this from that perspective, the Freedom Caucus are not fiscal conservatives. Senate File 69 is a card trick. Okay, it's a sleight of hand. It is not a tax cut. That's all there is to it. And if, you know, you want to make the argument that somehow backfills are important because you care about your local communities. Listen, creating an unsustainable, fiscally irresponsible redistribution of wealth scheme, which is backfill, isn't good. And it isn't really cutting taxes. What it will do is steal from future generations of Wyomingites. And the Freedom Caucus is the one who keeps saying that Wyoming has this huge spending problem, despite the fact that we've looked at these budgets over the last decade or so, and Wyoming isn't spending as much money. Wyoming has always spent money in relation to boom and bust. That's entrenched in the legislature in so many ways. It doesn't just spend though for spending's sake in general. Now, am I saying that there are things in that budget that can't be cut? No, I'm not, because there's plenty of fat that can be trimmed, or at least there's some. Maybe plenty's overstating the point, but there's some. I think for now we're going to see a big, you know, discussion in the conference committee. We'll see whether or not this bill can actually come out and survive. There's another mechanism for property tax relief, which is coming through a bill that's taking up what the voters actually voted for. not the People's Initiative. That's collecting signatures. You know, all these folks that are saying the people's signature, somehow the people. Listen, standing outside of Albertsons on a snowy day asking people if they want 50% off their property taxes is not speaking for the people. I would have signed that thing if someone had actually approached me. But do I think it's a good idea in perpetuity? No, I don't. And once most voters learn more information, and let's be clear, between now and when that thing goes on the ballot, there will be lots of people putting money into advertising campaigns to educate voters. So, but Amendment A actually went before the voters and it passed. It passed. So there's a bill out there by by Senator Eric Barlow from Campbell County to set that fourth class, that residential property tax class. And in that bill, it was actually the amount, which is, I forget, it's 9-point-something or other, was actually the amount was taken down to 8.3. That would be a permanent tax cut. That would be a permanent tax cut, a reduction in the tax rate for everyone across the board. So that bill's working its way through. So there's another mechanism, and it doesn't include any kind of backfill for now. I mean, I think we might see something come on. All right, last thing. So we'll wait and see. I'll keep you guys updated on where Senate File 69 is in the conference committee and how that happens. Last thing I want to touch on real quick is, I know I'm like a broken record, but is school choice, the education savings account bill coming through. It's waiting, I think, on concurrence. We'll see what happens to that bill. I don't really want to talk specifically about the bill. I want to talk about some of the arguments against the bill. And you've heard me say some of the issues that I had with it at the beginning. I think it's been amended into a position that I think is better. But I want to talk about a couple things. The first thing I want to talk about is the argument about the argument against universal from the perspective of private school education. This idea that because it is allowing people who have their children in private school right now, allowing them to access public funds to keep their children in private school, that this is wasteful or ridiculous because they're already paying the tuition. And here's what I would say. First of all, people have this idea that families who put their children in private school are all just fabulously wealthy. And that is not true. There are lots of families out there that parents are working two or three jobs and they're sacrificing a tremendous amount so that their children can go into a private school. And they do it because the public school does not have what they want for their children. They are taxpaying members of our community and they are sacrificing tremendously to make that choice. So this argument that somehow everybody that is fabulously wealthy who has their kids in private school is just not true. Now, for the people that can afford the tuition with no skin off their nose and no hardship to them whatsoever, I would wager a guess that a large percentage of those people are not even going to access this for that. They don't need to. And unless they're completely consumed by greed, most likely won't. Or if they do, they'll donate more money to the school or to something else. So that argument, I think, I just want to dispel that. The other one is this idea that somehow by having students leave the public school system, we're harming the public school system. And whenever I hear that, I don't know if this is the best analogy, but whenever I hear that, I say something along the lines of, public schools should be a prison. Is that what you're saying? Are you saying that families should sacrifice their children to the public school system because the system is so incredibly important that children are not allowed to leave? Because that goes against everything that I believe in terms of a Republican who believes in the market system, capitalism, that the market knows best and it works these things out and it always will. That greatness rises to the top in a market system where competition is available. I believe that. Why does that stop working in education? Because it doesn't. And schools are not prisons. Children should not be required and have to stay there, mandatory. Parents and families who do are not getting what they need out of public schools. And listen, our public schools do a great job. This should never be an argument against public schools. It should just be a recognition that they can't do everything right all the time. And that parents should have the right to choose something else if it isn't working for them. And it's actually the best situation. Having parents that stay in systems they aren't getting what they need is a miserable experience for the parents, the administrators, and the teachers for year on year on year on end. It's a miserable experience. This allows them opportunities to go elsewhere. I think this principle of free markets and competition doesn't end in education. And we should be open to these ideas of how to make this work. Is this bill, House Bill 199, a perfect bill? No. I have lots of negative things about how it was done, how it was rolled out, how it was crammed through the House. I have lots of things. It was malpractice in so many ways, but the way the whole thing was handled and the PR failure that it created for those of us who support school choice. Because it's hard to argue against some of the arguments. Some of the problems in the bill were just so glaringly apparent. But I just wanted to touch on those couple of things. I will always have more. I am always going to be a strong supporter of school choice. But I recognize people who don't, they have the right to their opinions. And I think we can all remain friends with that. At least we should be able to. So that's our week for the legislature. That bill, House Bill 199, is, I think, working on concurrence somewhere. I'll let you know the disposition. It may be done over either alive or dead by next week. So I can let you know that. Some other bills working through the House. We've got some social conservative bills that I've been following. Women's privacy, that's over in the Senate. That's Representative Martha Lawley's bill. It's a great bill that's working its way over in the Senate. So I'll keep you posted on that. But until then, I hope everybody has a beautiful, beautiful weekend this weekend. Looks like we're going to have some warm weather next week. Very excited about that. We're all going to start thinking about spring. Until then, everybody have a great weekend. Bye-bye.